you go first.
Switching things up on you.
Thanks. Hi, Bart. I'm an act named Joe.
Joe.
I really don't know how this is going to go. I sort of was... my clean date's 9/8/96, and I've never really spoke at a convention. I never want to, and I this stuff's hard for me. It's I know that I know how this program works. I know how, you know, the steps have made a change in my life, but like I still get all balled up here. And my wife was telling me, like, when I'm in a meeting or when I sit with people that I'm, you know, close to me, like, it's always easier for me to talk than in front of a bunch of people, even though I know we all have the same common goal here. I was hoping that a lot of you guys listened to Jim when he was talking, the beginning, the whatever you want to call it, the preamble it is to the introduction here, about the clarity, you know, the clarity of the message. It's about what I was thinking was... you know, without coming to believe, first of all, like, I would never have been able to think clear. Like, coming up here, I noticed, like, if anybody noticed on the way up here, if you came a turnpike or anything, there was, like, leaves changing already and stuff. How many of us ever remember any of that kind of stuff in our addiction? You know, and, you know, through working this program, staying clean a day at a time, just for today, you know, things and working the steps, you know, and traditions in my life. Things have become more clear. Things have I've become more aware and more spiritually grounded. You know, it's always a joke to me. Like, I always used to say that I don't go to spiritual retreats because I'm not really a spiritual person. But sometimes that's like the furthest from the truth. I know that my heart, it cries out to help people. It cries out. It reaches out sometimes. You know, sometimes it don't matter how much clean time you got around here, man. You know, recovery is just asking. It's like asking for help, and you know, it could be a guy with a couple of days clean, or you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, somebody who's been here all the time. What I know about this program is, though, the more you stick around, the more stuff stays with you, the more you do incorporate it in your life. How long am I supposed to ramble? 10 or 15 minutes, right? That's all right. Like I said, you know, I'm gonna get into it. Like, I reviewed all this stuff. I actually just worked second step with a sponsee about a month ago, and through this process, like I think I mentioned, one of the things that I lack is like my brain connections, you know, or not. They're still somewhat destroyed, I'm sure, because like a lot of times I'll start talking about one thing, and I'll end up on another, and I'll never, you know, finish the thought. So, you know, if sometimes I might even reach out and, you know, say, what the heck was I trying to get there to? So, but, you know, we're here to talk about the second, and this is one thing I think I started saying, and I didn't. Like, I was confused, like most of the time when I've gone to workshop meetings, and it's always like one topic. It's not like second and third step, but, you know, I know that they're so very closely tied, like six and seven, you know. You know, second step for me, just briefly, was just like it was just like opening that door crack to start to believe, because a lot of us don't believe in anything. You know, we think we're all that. You know, we run rampant on self-will. We're self-centered, the core of our disease. So, anyways, like I'm just gonna try to put all that junk out of my mind, all that stuff. Like, just don't. You know, believe me. I know, being around a few days, you know, I see some people that's been around a long time. And like I said, it does not matter. But my mind still gets confused, and a lot of times I still want to, first thought wrong, you know. Sometimes I think that's, you know, I'm sort of off topic, but I'm sort of trying to lead myself in here. Anyways, the change of those leaves that I started telling you about, really strange to me. This is like not even September yet, and I definitely saw leaves changing that. So, you know, like I said, it's just about being aware of the things that are going around me today, about life in general, which is, you know, this whole process for me is about learning to live life a different way. You know, it's learning to care about people. It's learning to put myself out of the way. So, you know, like, in the beginning, for me, the second step was all about, you know, stopping using dope. You know, it was very clear to me, you know, through my behaviors and all my time leading up to it, like most of us, you know, I didn't get here brimming with you know, I want to be here type stuff, you know, and I wasn't forced here, sort of, but I sort of was. Like, I was, you know, the desperation I felt, not knowing where to turn and what to do next, you know, I managed to keep some things through my addiction, and almost everything else I lost. I managed to keep, I was one of the lucky ones that kept my job and my vehicle, thank God, because I'm not sure, you know, it talks about humility in the second step, too. I was reading in the Works How and Why, because it goes into more in-depth last night and this morning. It's really, you know, you can make it as complicated as you want or as simple as you want. And I'm for the simple process, at least in the beginning. That's the way it was for me in the beginning. You know, I needed a way out of that depravity and desperation, sense of hopelessness. And, you know, I started seeing things that were possibilities. You know, our literature talks about, you know, lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arise and stuff like that. And that's, it's also intertwined, you know, all the stuff that you start getting back whenever you start being able to stay clean just for today, one day at a time. And already I lost track of where I'm at. I'm starting to try to get into, like, the second step for me in the beginning, I think. And one of the things I've been struggling with is a lot of pain. And I don't, you know, I'm trying to use the second step and the third step a lot of times for, like, because I found out that I can deal with a lot of pain. You know, I've only had to take something for, I had back surgery a couple years ago, and I really had my first taste of something that I was like, something that I'm glad I never tasted in my addiction. I was, the end of my road, it was mostly crack, you know, but, you know, my whole thing leading up to that, the whole insanity of my life was anything you would give me, you know, as much as you would give me, as long as I could go until I, you know, passed out or stuff. So, you know, I definitely, it became apparent that I definitely needed some change in my life. And, you know, through some things happening in my life, this is not a lead, so I don't really need to go there. Like, I found some hope in this program. You know, I saw some people, you know, I realized that my life was a mess, like the first step talks about, you know, the unmanageability, inside and outside, you know, and the signs were so obvious, it was just too hard to put it off any longer. You know, nobody wanted me around, my family disowned me, you know, I had lost almost everything of value, of monetary value in my life. The thing that mattered most to me was, like I said, a sense of meaningless. Hopefully you can follow me, because I'm not going to be here a long time, but like, I remember reading, when I was reading through this, about how, because a lot of us go through periods when you're around for a while that life, you know, it said life seems meaningless in that. And I remember reading that it said, you know, it told me to, at these times is when I need to reaffirm my commitment to the steps and start, you know, turning, starting to come to believe again, you know, because to be honest, once you surrender, that's really, for me, it was the basic ingredient necessary, you know, was the ability to be open-minded and willing enough to believe that something could make a little bit more sense of my life than I was making. Because it didn't make any sense at all, the things I was doing, the things I you know, using against my will. You know, I was raised in a religious family. If anybody has any doubts about this being a religious program, it's far from it, man. And anybody who talks religion here, I always make sure. Actually, my sponsor is like, he used to be like that. You know, I'd have to stop him at times. You know, you're going to scare people here, because one of the most basic things is we can develop our own higher power here, you know, and trying to think of some of the things I was reading about that. Like, it was one of the greatest things that I remember when I found that I had a hole in my heart from the first step, hole, and I needed to fill with something. And you know, literature tells me, and the people that have come before me tell me that, you know, I need to shove God in there and fill it up with people and hope and spiritual principles, and to make myself whole. Like, so, I forgot where I was going with that, but anyways, like, it made a lot of sense to me about when you've been around a while. Almost anything that in this program I found, whether it's a second step, third step, like, one thing I know is that when you're working on a step following step you went on, it's all, you always, things become more clear about why you did the work in, like, in the first step for the second, you know, why you have to start with just a little crack in the door before you can open your life up to a power greater than yourself. And, you know, it's just, you know, the word process kept popping up, and I used to hate that word. And, you know, being around a few days, like, it's like it becomes more and more apparent that, you know, no matter what you're going through, if you just give this, if you give the process a chance, that, you know, it could make make a difference in your life. And so, you know, the second step to me is it's about hope, and it's about just starting to believe. It's not, you know, nobody says you have to. I remember reading about it saying that you know, it's just, you know, the word process again. It's a gradual thing that happens. It just doesn't, you know, you just don't. There's been a lot of different little things that people have, like, pointed out to me, like stupid things like a light switch. You know, how many of us really believed when we were little that if you walked over to the wall and went like this, you know, that the light of the room would get illuminated? But, you know, when you're little, if you do that enough times, you're going to believe that that works for you, man. And it's really, really found that to be helpful to me. So, you know, here's what I know. Whenever I'm reaching for something, I need to go to the literature. And you know, like I said, I've read all the literature numerous times, worked steps with people, for myself. Used to go to a lot of step meetings, and no matter how many times I go back to the literature, I'm always able to find something else in there that I can reach out to. I know that some of the things, like, that happened to me in the beginning, that were unexplainable, like when I, the further I get in this process, you know, things become more clear. You know, I was talking about the clarity, not only the clarity of the, you know, the NA message, but just how things work in this program, how the process works out, and trusting that, you know, there's a reason why we do the steps in order, and there's a reason why you have to totally give up before you can finally start to believe that something can help you. You know, it talks about in here, you know, how once our lives begin to improve, that, you know, how that makes that our hope turns into faith as that happens. You know, like I said, that, you know, nobody believed, I didn't believe that, you know, how about, you know, just even things like the stove and that, you know, when we have to, sometimes we have to learn our own lessons, you know. And talks about watching other addicts stay clean is a compelling proof of the existence of power greater than ourselves. I can remember so many times when I thought I was worse than other, when some people were, you know, or I thought they were worse than me, and I see them, the program changing their lives. One of the first people that ever exposed me to this program, like, we went through some really tough times at the end. And he disappeared from the face of the earth to me. And like, when I went to search for what happened to him, like, people were like, they had all these stories, like, he found God, he did this, he did that. And it turns out he found Narcotics Anonymous, and he's one of my predecessors, and I turned to him a lot, you know. We must let go of our fears about how we appear to others. You know, even to this day, you know, it's like, just like, it's probably one of the reasons that I still hate standing up front. When I first come around, I always remember, like, wanting to give my first lead, and you know, so very much looking forward to that. And then, you know, as time goes on, like, I wish that nobody would ever ask me to speak anyway. I love to go to meetings. I go to a ton of meetings. If you know me, you know, I still go to 4 or 5 meetings a week, sometimes more. And, you know, if anybody's reaching out, I reach back. And sometimes I'm able to, like, identify people who were sort of like me in the beginning and, like, didn't have the ability to reach out, you know. And so, like, we sometimes, you know, this program's about asking for help. You know, it talked about being teachable in the second step. But, you know, if people can't reach out, sometimes we've got to give them a little nudge sometimes, you know. And, If you've been around, you know that this program does not work you know, until you want it to work, you know, and it works because once you get a glimpse of it, you can see that it works in other people's lives. Sometimes, like I started to tell you, like people that you used to be associated with or saw were making a difference in their lives. They'd stopped using. They had found, you know, they found a new way to live. And it starts with the first three steps, you know. It starts with realizing you can't do it alone, starting to believe that something can help you, and finally in step three, the hard part is turning it over, you know. One of the things, my dad, he got to see me clean for 2 years, but, you know, like I sort of alluded to, they didn't ever want to see me. They changed the locks. It was a process with them either dealing with me. And in the end, like, when I got clean, he was diagnosed with a type of cancer, and within 2 years he was dead. But, like, one of the things he told me on his deathbed was, and this doesn't mean that he trusted me back then. This was all part of my process, and I don't know if God, you know, I know it talked about in this step or the next one that, you know, we're not meant to understand everything, you know, and that's part of the reason why learning to depend on a power greater than ourselves, depending on God. I'm afraid to say that word, you know. I call mine God, you know, and it's not the same God I had when I was going to church. I very rarely, but. You know, it's the same principle, man. If I know if I'm doing right, he told me that. It says here we begin to make choices that help us rather than harm us, and it's pretty much what he said on his deathbed. And you know, even though I know he still didn't trust me and trust that I was going to stay clean, I had burnt him so many times that this was like very shortly before he died. It made a difference in my life. It gave me hope that I was, you know, turning the corner. Even though I'm telling you, this is 2 years into my recovery now, 2 years clean, you know, and I some of the things I'm talking about really weren't as apparent then, you know. I started telling you about, you know, how it was all about dope in the beginning. It's not like that today. You know, I learned to surrender on a daily basis to things that are. I remember reading in here that when I'm struggling. I'm probably come across it. I'm ready to like delve into step three here a little bit. It's just like, and the whole process. Like one of the things I tell people is, like I'm not sure. You know, when you go to school, you don't spend a month or two in one grade. You know, so like I don't think there's any rush to work through the steps. I really don't. Like, when I got out of rehab, I wanted to work step four, and thank God the people in my life, you know, made me back up and take a look at some of these things. And, you know, we developed this willingness over time. The willingness we experience in our early recovery is valuable, even though we may be willing only to a certain degree. I was saying, like, you know, back then it was just, I guess maybe just the willingness, you know, to, give us a chance, you know. You hear people say a lot of times your misery can be refunded. It's certainly, definitely true, you know. I haven't had to do any more research since I got, but like I said, like most of us come around here, you know, I didn't get this. It took quite a few rehabs and a couple of mental institutions and stuff, and it turns out that, you know, the answer was right here in this book, man. It turns out that the process all started with step one, giving up. Step two and three, you know, learning to develop power and to use that power. You know, I remember talking about, you know, the words trust and faith. You know, trust, they were associating trust in two, turning into faith in three, you know, and having the ability to help you to let yourself become attached to something that can help you. A lot of times, you know, I hear people talking about, and myself too, is you know, how hard it is sometimes to, you know, turn it over on a daily basis. You know, we have that self-centeredness in us, and we you know, we tend to want to control things. And you know, when we see those signs pointing to what I'm talking about, like, you know, the word reaffirm. You know, I was thinking about that on the way up because. It's sort of like any time I come to a crisis in my life, I have to trust that this worked in the beginning, you know, the process worked, as far as I was then and as far as I am now, and continue will. And when I have doubts, if I just let myself believe in what, you know, how this all panned out for me, that, you know, the word reaffirm just puts it pretty much what it means to me, you know, like And this is not easy for me. It's, you know, it talks about, again, another, it talks about controlling everything and everyone around us, you know. We relax the grip on our burdens we've been carrying and turn them over to the care of a higher power. Sometimes a lot of people, like for step three, if you're having a hard time with a higher power, it's like, I've heard it said, is this is the step where you have to affirm to make a decision to go on to the rest of the steps. You know, this is not a three-step program, you know, and actually this is the basis. It just said back here, first three steps provide us with a solid spiritual foundation. We will need to work the rest of our steps. You know, how hard would it be to write a searching and fearless moral inventory if you didn't have some basis in faith? Another thing I tell people that's connected with me and I live it in my life is, like, we have, you know, God, even though when you make this decision and you learn to trust that power, it's like he can't do it without some footwork. You know, we hear about doing a footwork around here. You know, it says we need to participate in our own lives. We can't simply sit back and expect God to do everything. We are responsible for our recovery. You know, and I just, you know, I'm not ashamed of what I went through to get here. I'm actually pretty proud of where I am. Most people that know me and know the godless, self-centered person that I was appreciates who I am today. They appreciate that I'm willing to drive, you know, even though, like, this is really not my cup of tea, whether I'm standing here or camping. My idea of roughness, like having no hot tub in my hotel room. That's the truth, man, you know. I hate being dirty, you know. I do love people, though, man. I have a soft spot in my heart, and you know, I don't think I would ever develop that soft spot without learning to come to believe in step two and making a decision to trust that higher power. Recovery is a process of discovery. It's a new way to live for me. We notice a gradual change in our thinking. The world is no longer distorted by self-pity, denial, and resentment, although sometimes I... You know, one of the things that I was before I even reviewed all this stuff the last couple of days was, you know, how step 11 made a difference in my life. It actually reaffirmed that this power could work in many different ways. You know, on a daily basis, to try to get in touch with that power and to let it work in my life. You know, like I said, you know, it's you know, it, give yourself a chance. You know, get through the first part of this. You know, I don't know who's, you know, what. I'm sure we got varying amounts of time around here. You know, I know one thing that doesn't matter. Time doesn't equal recovery, man. If you don't do the work, you're not going to recover. You know, sometimes I think this is why in the beginning, like, I stunted my own growth. Like, most of us don't just stop doing the things we do. Most of us have a hard time changing people, places, things. We have a hard time changing our ideas and our concepts, and certainly about changing that something can help us out of this, you know, hole that we've dug for ourselves in our heart and in our lives, you know. So, you know, like I said, I just hope that I'm sure, Art, I've listened to this guy, you know, I'm pretty sure this guy's a way better speaker than me. I appreciate you guys listening, and if anybody has anything after, if they that might help me, because like I said, I don't know all the answers. All I know is the answers in the book. The answers in the people that come before me. You know, when I'm going through something, I look for the literature. I look to people, and above all, I look to the higher power that I develop. Thanks for listening, people.
All right, I'd like to introduce the second speaker. Art D. from Based on Attraction, Laurel Mountain Highland area of Narcotics Anonymous.
What's going on? What's going on? Lovely day out here in the woods. Damn bugs are driving me fucking crazy. Getting on my legs and arms, man. I'm from the city, man. I come out here. I always come out here. I support this. Last year I was the chair of this. You know, I want to thank the Journey to Continue. The Journey Continues. Committee for asking me to come out here and share, and you know, I always like to do my part in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I want to thank them for taking a risk on me because I'm a broken vessel. And you know, when I get ready to say something, ain't no telling what's gonna come out. I'm still swearing, I'm still cussing, so if you got some expectations on how I should share, you know, if you got any forgiveness, if you got to the seventh step, maybe you can try to get some forgiveness in your heart right now. Originally, I'm from Buffalo, New York. That's where I did the beginning of my recovery. I got clean on Valentine's Day, 1992. And I came up in this place called Projects. Housing Projects. It was called the Talbert Mall. They called it the Jefferson Projects. And just for a reference, if you ever anywhere in the inner city and it's a street, it was on Jefferson and Clinton where the projects were at. And if you're on any street where the name of the street is where two presidents cross, you need to get the fuck out of there. I'm just trying to let you know. Because it was rough camp. They wouldn't deliver pizzas. Couldn't catch a cab. They sniped off the rooftops. Gangs all over the place. And if you ain't know nobody, you get hurt. And the reason why I'm going here is because I want you to understand that I come from a crazy place. You know, I came up as a young kid loving animals. My first job was an animal caretaker at a cancer research institute. And I just wanted to be a good kid. I just wanted to do the right thing. When I was living in the projects, I had hamsters, rats, or mice. You know, they were spotted mice. I had chameleons. I even had beetles that I used to breed. And I had a praying mantis in a terrarium. And I used to feed the praying mantis and let them walk on my arms. And, you know, I come up as a kid wanting to be normal. And I was getting good grades in school, and I was doing really good in school and stuff. And I remember coming home from school one day, and my father said, "Yeah, you good in school, boy. But if them boys get a hold of you in the street, what the hell you gonna do then?" And the message that it sent to me was, all the knowledge that I might have had didn't matter. It didn't count. What I needed to learn was the streets. And that's what I did. Initially, I used to be victimized coming home from school. Bullies would take my money. I was the only child. So I learned how to take care of myself. I started taking up a little bit of martial arts, started reading boxing books, practicing boxing. And I went from being the victim to the victimizer. Start victimizing people and start doing the same thing to people that people was doing to me. Because that's what I was taught. This is where I came from. I came from a place, man, that didn't allow me not. I mean, you're not even counting the fact of the defects of characters that I had. I got all these defects that tell me that I'm not enough, that I'm not good enough, that I don't measure up. And I'm thinking there's something wrong with me. I understand the day that God didn't make no junk. I understand the day that God did what he did, and everybody is uniquely designed for God's specific purpose. You know, I remember this guy used to say in Narcotics Anonymous that there's a wrench for every nut that walks in the door. And I understand that today, but at that time, I just felt that I had to fit in and I had to do what everybody else did. So that's what I did. And I went from, see, because I'm saying a place of sanity I was at. I went from a place of sanity to a place of insanity. You know, we're talking about a restoration to sanity. And I went from a place of sanity where I was falling down and getting up to falling down and laying there and thinking that that's the position I'm supposed to be in. I mean, anybody that thinks that they can put drugs in their arms, you're steadily trying to kill yourself and tell yourself you're having a good time, you got to be a crazy motherfucker. You got to be crazy. And all the things that went with it, the gangs and all of that, and it went on for, I mean, from the age, from pretty much from the age of 11 years old all the way up till I was 38 years old. I ain't coming to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous till I was 38 years old. It was breaks in between there, different rehabs. But if you consider all that time of being out there, I was crazy, man. But I didn't know I was crazy. All of a sudden, you know, I had got to the place where insanity made sense. Taking from each other. If I took something from you, I did something good. If I could beat you out some money, I did something good. I was crazy, man. And that craziness drove me to a place in all of its manifestations. It drove me to a place where death was staring me straight in the face. And when I really seen how close I was to dying, and I had no other where to go, I had to come into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. This is, you know, I remember them coming into the rehab, and you know what was really funny is that I had heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, but when I was in the rehab, I hadn't heard of Narcotics Anonymous until when I got in there, and they showed up at a meeting, and it wasn't that many people, and I was like, you know, maybe I want to go to the other fellowship because there's more people in that other fellowship, and they probably understand how to fix me and how to do things a little bit better. I didn't understand that we was looking for some place to get some identification, that the identification of what I was doing is what I really needed the most. Empathy. Understanding. Somebody that where I can go and share and talk about the craziness of my life, where people would understand me and wouldn't make me feel strange. Wouldn't make me feel different. Where I could go and I can talk about stealing, prostitution, whatever the hell I wanted to talk about. And people not only understood, but some of them had been through the same experiences and they stayed clean. So because I needed some hope on how to stay clean. When I got to the rules of Narcotics Anonymous, I was hopeless. I knew I was powerless. They said, most of us do not have to think twice about this. We know. My whole life was centered in getting drugs. So when I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I had to come, I came in honest. They, you know, it wasn't, you know, you didn't have to tell me. I knew I was an addict. I mean, when I was in the streets, I used to look at guys that was addicts. And I used to want to be like them because in the beginning when I seen them, they seemed to be so cool. They seemed to have it together. They seemed to have a comfort that I didn't have. But I didn't understand that it was a temporary fix for a permanent problem. So I came in the rooms and I recognized that I need to get honest about who I was. And let me just say this here. I'm at the first step And I was taught to get three principles out of every step because my disease is threefold. So out of the first step, I got honesty, acceptance, and surrender. It wasn't hard to get honest about what was going on. It was hard to get honest about stopping. It wasn't hard to get honest about the condition I came near it. It was hard for me to get honest about how I was going to live after that. Because I didn't know no other way. I had lost my way. My mind was confused. I didn't know what the right way to go was. I didn't trust my thinking no more. My thinking wasn't nothing that I could depend on because it always kept putting me back into a crazy place. They said, "You're an addict." And like I said, it was no problem me understanding that. But when acceptance came to play, it wasn't about accepting the fact that I was an addict. It was about accepting the fact that I couldn't stop on my own. I couldn't stop on my own free will. Compulsion had set in, man, and I didn't know how to stop. So acceptance was for me was like, if I could stop, was to follow this program. The acceptance was for me to follow this program because I had all the evidence in the world that the way that I was living was killing me. So I surrendered. I threw up the white flag and I said, "What do y'all want me to do?" They said, "Get a sponsor, man." They said, "Get somebody that can teach you how to think so you don't keep thinking on your own. Because your thinking is fucked up." I didn't know I was so messed up mentally. I thought because of the things that I had done, the places I had been, where addiction and my life had taken me, that I was sharp. When the people would share, I would listen and I would say, "Man, I could tell them something. I could tell them something." I couldn't tell them nothing I went through clean, though. I could tell them how I went through situations in my life, but I couldn't tell them how I went through those situations that came out clean. And I thought that I needed to, you know, and just like you was talking about, Joe, in the beginning when I first got here, I thought what it was all about, I thought it was all about me coming here and being able to share, to be able to say something. But that's not what this program is about. It's about learning to live these principles in your life. It's about learning the principles and trying to put a simple application of these principles in my life. Living it. If I'm not living the stuff that I learned here, I'm not going to get nothing from what I'm doing. If I just intellectualize this stuff and just understand this stuff in my mind, I'm not going to get nothing out of my life. I'm going to get the same stuff I always got because my defects are going to take me back to the same behavior. It could sound good, it could look good, but be around me for a period of time and you'll find out, woo-wee, there's some messed up stuff in there if I don't follow this way. I got a sponsor to help me with my thinking. And you know, you get a power. You know, this program, you know, we always wanted instant gratification. That's what we want in life. And this program gives us instant gratification. When you live the principles, I know that's my experience, is that when I live the principles in my life, I immediately feel better about myself. That's the instant gratification. It ain't the hit that I used to get. They used to give me a rush and rush all my dopamines out my body. It ain't the hit I used to get like that. But it's a hit of that God intended for me to have. That's enough. It's enough. I always wanted more because that's what I was used to getting, was more. But with that power of choice and me having a sponsor and still being crazy and putting the drug down. You know, the drug, man, every waking moment that I had was looking for ways and means to find more. When I got that taken away, man, that left a void. It left a void because when you walk into your kitchen and every utensil in your kitchen is a trigger. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're talking about, you know, everything is ways. The spoon, oh my God. You know what I mean? With the chore boy, oh no. You know, I mean, everything is a trigger, man. The knives that I use to cut, I mean, whatever. Everything I use is all ways and means to get more. And some stuff that don't even look like it that we just got, you know, inventive with and creative, you know, and start making stuff. You know what I mean? I go in the bathroom, a toilet paper roll. Oh, no. You know, with all that stuff being stuff that occupied my life, when you take all that stuff away, man, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to think? I need somebody to tell me, give me some direction. First principle, open-mindedness. Second step, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It's really ironic that as soon as you jump into that second step, it says, we came to. Like I was in a fog. Like I was like, and all of a sudden I came to. And it was like, whoa, damn. Life's been going on without me, huh? Well, what the hell? How do I join this race? You know, what do we do? Where do I go? Why am I here? You know what I mean? You wake up and all of a sudden you presented with life. But I was in a place where I wasn't doing no thinking. I was in a coma. And all of a sudden, I came to. And I came to with that void still sitting there. And I need to ask somebody, would you be my sponsor? Would you be my guide? Could you show me some direction? Could you help me to try to live again? And it was really, you know, a short of like crossing the street on a red light, a green light, man. I had to bounce everything off my sponsor. Because I didn't know. I knew how to die, but I had forgot how to live. I don't know if y'all went through this here. When I first came to Rules of Narcotics Anonymous and picked up the readings, I couldn't even read a sentence right. I was reading them short and choppy. I couldn't let them flow. They wouldn't make sense. They didn't have no feeling to them. They just came out like, duh. You know, they just came out. You know what I mean? Because my brain was just so messed up when I got here, man. So I couldn't rely on my thinking. I had to rely on somebody else that was going to help me. So everything that came in my way, anything that came in my life, if it was a word in the book, if it was a relationship, a girl looked like she might want to, you know, talk to me or something, I ran all that stuff by my sponsor. You know, I found somebody, man, that, you know, my father, you know, I find a lot of times, you know, that a lot of times that a lot of people in addiction, you know, in the program, they miss a relationship with their father. I ain't saying everybody, but a lot of people do. And they find themselves learning how to live for people that's out in the world that don't know how to live themselves. We get misinformed by misinformed people. And I didn't have no father around to tell me what to do. And to me, you know, my mother was like my father, but I didn't want to hear what she had to say because I was a man. And once my father wasn't around, I was the one that's supposed to have been in control of the house. But I didn't even know how to control myself. Not, needless to say, at the age of 15, my first child was born, and that told me right there that I was a man. All of a sudden, at the age of 15, I was a man. I went to the military in Vietnam at the age of 17. You know, all those different things told me that I was a man, but the decisions that I was making in my life was contrary to what I was saying. I was making some bad decisions, and I didn't understand how valuable the power of choice was. The power of choice is real value. If I can really utilize the power of choice all of my life the proper way, I wouldn't be here today. And that's not to say that I'm not grateful for being here, because one thing I am grateful for is the fact that even though I'm messed up, I got a program to fix it. There's a lot of people that's messed up out there that they ain't got no solution. That they, you probably know some people that they ain't addicts, but they sure need principles in their life. You know what I mean? And so, I'm grateful for this program, and I'm grateful for the things that I went through that brought me to this point. Because even though those experiences were painful, what those experiences gave me was a man that I just don't believe who he is today. A man that's beyond my wildest dreams. Just by following this program. Following the people. Following somebody else that was here before me. Looking at other people coming into the meetings. I remember when I came into one of my first meetings and I seen this dude. We called him Cheese. Cheese was from the street. We called him Cheese because he was so grimy that he'll steal a rat from the cheese from a rat. He was just that grimy. And Cheese was getting clean. When I walked in the door and I said, "Man, Cheese, what you doing here?" He said, "Man, I've been clean for 18 months. I was like, "Yeah, right. Cheese, please." Ain't no way in the world you've been clean for no 18 months, man. But he looked different. He wasn't creepy. He was upright. And I kept watching Cheese, and they passed the plate around. And they made a collection. And they got the money out the meeting. And they gave the money to Cheese, and I said, "Yeah, that's why your hat." "Yeah, okay." And I said, "I know what. I'm going to stick around long enough so I get a position like Cheese, because Cheese handled the cheese." You know what I mean? I wanted to handle the cheese like Cheese. You know what I mean? But when I started finding out that he was really using that money to pay for the meeting place, and he had gotten to be a real honest person. And for me to see that, that gave me hope, man. That dude was worse than me. That dude was in a worse condition than me, man. I never thought Cheese would. It was many guys, man, that I, you know, he was in the category of the ones that die. And that dude was staying clean, and I was like, wow. I said, if Cheese can do it, I can do it. It was the hope shot. Another principle, or the second step, hope. I got hope from watching other people come through the door, people that was there before me, seeing people that came in after me, seeing people going through problems greater than the problems that I was going through, and no matter what they went through, they were staying clean. And I started believing. You know, there's a difference between belief and faith. Belief is that fire's hot. I believe that fire's hot. And I can look at it and you can tell me and I can believe that that fire's hot. But I won't know until I take a step over there and put my hand in that fire and get burnt. I don't know whether I should, like that door. I believe that door over there will open if I just turn that knob. But if I don't go over there and turn that knob and walk through that door, I won't be able to get into that building. Walking through that door is faith. The belief for me was just me getting the evidence. Not just the evidence from watching y'all, but the evidence that was going on in my life. I started seeing things start turning out for the better for me and everybody else. They started getting employed. They started getting cars, and family was coming back in their lives, and they started building relationships with their parents, and they were looking better. But things was getting better in their life, and as I seen those things, I started to believe that, man, you know, to me, man, the second step, to me, is the most powerful step in all 12 steps. Because, for one thing, I need to use my sponsor to help guide me through my life. And without his guidance, I don't know if I was able to stay clean. But for another thing, when I came in the rooms and I shared the stuff that I shared in the rooms, and nobody condemned me, and nobody shunned me, and nobody looked at me like I was different or strange, and they shared some experience, strength, and hope, and they gave me some stuff back that said, here, take this with you. This might help you through your problem. You know, that belief, man, it started to grow. I started recognizing, man, that if I just came to the rooms and talked about the stuff that was going on in my life, that I didn't have to stay insane. And the solutions that they was giving me, and the stuff that they was telling me back, and sometimes my conscience was telling me that I would feel some things sometimes, was letting me know that you're doing the right thing. You're going in the right direction. I started getting soundness of mind. Soundness of mind that is fleeting based on whatever problem that I might be going through. But I could still utilize that. And you know, I still understand also today is that if I don't understand or don't know what to do, that sometimes I don't need to do nothing at all. That sometimes I just need to stand back and just wait on God to move. And wait on God to show me clearly. And some people got a problem with God, but I'm sorry. It's all through our book. And you can call it good orderly direction if you want to. But it's something about them saying we made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of the God of our understanding. What does it say? What's the third step say? Is that it? Oh, we understand Him. As we understand Him. It don't say as we understand it. As we understand, that's it. It says as we understand Him. You can make it what you want to make it, but I got no explanation for what I can't see sometimes. I got no explanation for putting my hand in an electric socket and getting shocked. I got no understanding for standing up here being able to breathe right now. Yes, I understand the molecules, H2O or oxygen or whatever that's supposed to be keeping me breathing. I understand, but where did it come from? It's some things that I don't understand. I remember this guy saying, I'd rather live this life believing in God, get on the other side and find out that there ain't one, than to live this life not believing in God, get on the other side and find out that there is. Because believing, listen, it ain't whether you believe in what you believe, it's that you believe. It's that you believe. Because with the belief alone, I can rest all of my insane thoughts, all of my actions. They said we made a decision to turn our will and our lives. That's our thinking and our actions. I can turn that stuff over to something that I believe. Even if it ain't there, it's off of me. If it ain't there, it still keeps me, it gives me a comfort just from believing. Just from believing. It don't have to be a specific entity. It could be what you want it to be, but I need to believe. That belief is real powerful. It wasn't until, look, how about this? I didn't think I could stop using until I walked into the room of a whole bunch of me's and saw them not using and I believed I could stop. But all the times that I went to jail, all the times that I prayed, all the times that I went to mama, all the different things I did to try to stop, and it wasn't until I came somewhere where I could see somebody that was just like me that I could believe in. And that made me believe that I can do it too. Belief is where it's at. With that belief that I put in me from the evidence that I've seen in so many different ways, it brought me to trust. And the third step. If I believe, man, then if I believe what you're telling me, then maybe I can trust really turning this stuff over to the God of whatever you're talking about. Maybe I can trust the direction that I'm going. I got evidence that my life is getting better. Maybe I can trust this higher power. There's a difference. I need to say this right here. There's a difference between a power greater and a higher power. Some people get it mixed up and they believe that a power greater and a higher power is the same thing. A power greater could be another addict. A power greater could be the literature. A power greater can also be a higher power. A power greater can be my conscience. Joe said a power greater could be pain. You know, a lot of us, man, we go through the second step thinking about, you know, open-mindedness, hope, and belief, but we forget about pain. I don't know about you, but for me, that was the second step most of the time. Most of the time, it wasn't what the principals were saying. It was only until I got myself into a situation where I had enough pain where I said, damn, this is hurting so bad. What was that they said? Shit. I need to follow that way. That's when it started making sense, when the pain got great enough. So I need to trust with this belief. I went into the trust and I started trusting God. And I started doing some practice and stuff, some little stuff. I said, let me trust Him with this. Ta-da. Let me trust Him with that. Ta-da. And I started seeing, like, wow, this trust is really working, man. By this time, I don't know what happened to this. It seemed like this vanished from the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous. But by this time, the obsession for me to use had been lifted. It seemed like that obsession to being used, I don't hear that it's been lifted from people as much no more. It seems like, you know, people stay around here for a long period of time and they still feel like using. I don't know about you. I mean, I hear you. Listen, I ain't saying, listen, the disease takes another form. Now I use something else. I might use sex. I might use, the disease takes another form. I don't stop using, but the obsession to use drugs somewhere in this process, while I was believing and coming to believe, something took hold. And all of a sudden, I started recognizing, instead of me having the drug dreams, I was having regular dreams. Instead of me getting those invading thoughts and those obsessive thoughts of using or ways and means to get more, this stuff started going away. I even started having dreams where if I got ready to use, in the dream my sponsor would show up and just fuck the whole high up. You know what I mean? My conscience had started getting better, man. You know? So I got willing. I got willing to say, this is really working. I'm going to really do this thing. Is this what you want me to do? I'm willing to do whatever you show me. Show me what you want me to do in the second step, and I'm willing to do it in the third. And God said, I want you to move on in the steps because you're ready to face you. I needed some faith to go back into that closet where I... See, because all this time I haven't addressed all those issues that I have in my life. And I needed something to go in there. I didn't have the courage to go in there on my own. And that's the reason why I took liquid courage. Or I took heroin or acid or whatever. because I didn't want to face them demons that seemed to be overpowering in my closet. But with the faith that I had and the evidence that I had that God, listen, I'm powerless over my addiction, right? So how powerful is my higher power if it took me away from my addiction? Can I trust that? Can I trust a God like that? That's so powerful that it took me away from the disease of addiction, something that had me in the grips that enslaved me? That's an awesome power, man. I don't care what you call it, recognize what it is. It's like right now, if all the air got shut off, we'd all die. You can't see it, but you know, if you don't get no air, you're going to die. I know today, if I do not believe and keep doing what I need to do and have faith and trust the God, whatever you want to call it, it's a God for me, that I ain't going to live. That doesn't mean I'm going to die, but I won't live. Do you understand what I'm saying? I won't live. Man, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. You just couldn't understand. And then you could. To how valuable and how wonderful a program we got, man. All I say is like this. Do yourself a favor and give yourself a break. You deserve a chance to live today, and it's a life worth living. That's all I got. I'm an addict named Murray.